Hello, everyone, and welcome to this webinar. I'm Francis Seely from NCAF, Enfield Climate Action Forum, and Global Net 21, and also a local group, a social network called Enfield Voices. And today we're going to be interviewing Christiana Heapy, and she's involved in a project which is really quite interesting and exciting. She's a member of one of the Friends of the Parks, and she's got with others several of those parks together, of friends anyhow. And they created a sort of collaborative manifesto. And the aim is to actually put pressure on candidates who will be standing in the local elections this year, coming in May. So, Christiana, we're going to talk about that. And, you know, thank you for joining us today. As I always start by asking people, and I'll ask you this, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Sure. Thank you so much for inviting me to speak about this, Francis. I really appreciate it. So my kind of professional background was until recently doing policy work, so advocacy work and lobbying at a national level for charities. So I started off working in the violence against women and girls sector. And then more recently, I worked for a charity that supports leaders of other charities and talks about the importance of the voluntary sector in general. But about 6 months ago, I decided to take a big leap and retrain as a social worker. So I'm currently studying animal placement, training to be a social worker. And then I'm chair of Friends of Tottenham Hall Recreation Ground Boundary Playing Fields, which we started in deep in lockdown territory in September last year, and I'm a trustee of a charity called the Equality Trust.
Okay, I mean, what made you get involved with Friends of the Park in Tottenham? What was the sort of motivation behind that?
So me and my family have lived pretty much right next to Tottenham Recreational Ground for about 8 years now, and it's just, I suppose it's one of those things that, you know, ever since we moved, it was one of the appeals of moving to the street was, you know, this is lovely big rec, you know, for us to use and for the kids to use. But then, you know, just year on year, we could see that nothing was being done to it. So not only was nothing being invested in it, but it was actually getting kind of worse. Some of the play equipment was kind of getting damaged and not fixed, or, you know, rubbish was worsening and bins were being taken away and not replaced. And you know, we talked to other people in the park, got a dog, which is always really useful when you're involved in parks because you're out there twice a day, come rain or sun, you know, whatever the weather. And I'm talking to them and they kind of agreed. And I think it just came to a point where I realized we needed to come together and do something, because it wasn't, nothing was going to improve without the residents coming together to ask for it, really.
But I mean, it's not that you just want improvements, you actually believe, don't you, as all, as most people do who are involved in parks, that they're important for physical and mental health.
Oh, so much so. And I think, you know, it's something I've always thought, but it's been obviously so much more noticeable, obviously, during lockdown, when I would go to the park and it's, you know, it's quite a big space. It's not massive, but it, you know, I think it's sizable, and you can just feel the weight come off your shoulders when you're surrounded by green. And there's something I think really lovely that always makes me feel happy about seeing other people in the park, about feeling part of this community. So even if we don't know people, kind of walking through and seeing families having picnics or seeing kids playing football or walking groups, you can just see what a hub it is, and that just means it's so precious. It's such a precious resource that we have to protect, because it is important for physical and mental health.
And I mean, you're a member of one of the parks, obviously one of the Friends, but you've got together with others, haven't you, to form a collective. I mean, what was the purpose of that?
So I think being relatively new to local kind of goings on, I haven't been involved in any other local groups before, and I actually use, I think, most of the parks in Enfield. I take pride in trying to find out where they all are and taking, going and exploring them, but I think often there's not a big, what I notice is there's not really a connection between the Friends groups in the different parks. So everyone's friendly with each other, and that there was a couple of people in particular, you know, especially Carol, who helped give me advice when was asking about setting up. So it's lovely, but there's not that kind of formal program of work. And I think without that kind of unity, it makes it much easier for counsellors, whether intentionally or not, you know, to say, oh, we're investing in this part of the borough. And then kind of that part, obviously that group and those residents would support that, understandably. But then that might maybe means that other parts of the borough that feel a bit neglected kind of lose momentum for getting work done in their area. So I think if we have a unified voice about what we expect as a minimum across the borough, then we can celebrate each other's successes, but we can also kind of stand in solidarity with each other when we see that maybe somebody's getting a bit of a raw deal.
Yeah, I mean, I think collaborative networks is the way to go in the future, because it does create that strength. But in getting everyone together in the way you have produced a manifesto, haven't mm-hmm. you? Why did you do that?
I think it's useful to have a document which we can all kind of point to and say, you know, this is broadly what we believe. They're always really hard, I think, because it has to recognise, any kind of shared document has to recognise how different the spaces are that the groups represent. So we've got some really massive heritage parks in Enfield, which are beautiful and stunning, and big open spaces. But they're just as important as the really small, you know, corner parks that, you know, look, that people go to within 10 minute walk of their house, and they can get their kids can go out and have a run around. And so it's about valuing those, all the different spaces. So I think the manifesto helps us to see what we have in common with each other. So it's so easy to think about how the different parks are different, but I think the manifesto document is about helping us see what we all have in common and what our shared aspirations are. And that should give us that platform which to build those collaborative networks going forward.
And I guess working together gives you more strength, doesn't it? And it gives strength, as you just said, to the smaller parks, the smaller friends who often don't get their voice heard as much. I mean, by doing it collectively, everyone's voice gets heard.
Yeah, I think that's the key. And I think the thing with any group is to make sure that there's not, that we listen kind of to what people are saying about what's important to them or what's not important to them, and really kind of make sure it's a democratic exercise. And I think, you know, organizing and collective action is really the root of all change, I think. And obviously our individual groups are a great start in that, but the bigger the network, the more connections we can make, the greater chance we have of succeeding. I think that's why NCAF has been so successful and has done such great work. And I think that's, you know, one of the organisations I was thinking of when looking at how we could do more collaborative work.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're very pleased to work with you, because we believe in those sort of networks. But I gather you've done it as well because you feel that friends groups have been poorly consulted, haven't you, on topics that are relevant to them. I mean, how do you think, or why do you think you've been poorly consulted?
Yeah, and it's something that gets me quite angry, so I have to be careful not to get my ranting hat on. But, you know, I know, so the Enfield Blue and Green strategy is a really good example. So the Blue and Green strategy is the Enfield Council's document for how they want to approach waterways and parks for the next few years. And that was released for consultation in kind of early December last year, or the year, I can't remember the year now. So just about 13 months ago, essentially. And, you know, our group, we were quite newly formed, and we thought, great, this is a really important opportunity to influence and to kind of put our point across. So, you know, we worked hard to pull a meeting together and draft a response and get lots of people's views and then submit something across what was essentially the holiday period. So not an ideal time to be consulting publicly, I think, if you're thinking strategically about how to get the most, you genuinely want the most voices involved. But we did it and we submitted, and then we heard nothing, and the announcement came that this is what the strategy would be, and we still hadn't had any feedback on our response. And then at the council runs some meetings quarterly, which all the friends of parks are invited to, and nobody else had responses or consultations either. And then we asked for that and said how was our feedback looked into, because now this document's been finalised and passed by the council without any feedback being given to any of the groups, seemingly, who contributed to it. And they said, oh yeah, we'll feedback soon. And they gave a date a couple of months away. And I said, well, it's not really appropriate. And then that date was moved as well. And we still haven't had, so 13 months on, there's a consultation that lots of people have fed into. It's been passed by the council and nobody has consulted with the community groups who are supposed to, well, they are central to making parks work in Enfield. I just think it's not acceptable practice.
Yeah, I mean, engagement is something I think that this local authority finds difficult. I don't quite understand how to do. But you talk about all political parties. I think you said in your site or your document that you say warm words on the importance of green spaces have not been met with action and investment by councillors of all political parties and none. So it's right across the board, isn't it? Why do you think that is?
I think it's important that, you know, when you talk about, or when I talk about things that I'm not happy with, obviously people think, oh, you're criticising Labour because Labour are in charge. And I think it's really important to be clear that I'm not party political. I'm not part of any party. None of the engagement and communications with the other groups have been party political. And this, the purpose of this exercise is not to endorse any group or independent or any individual candidate or not. The purpose is simply to get more people aware about what is important to people in Enfield and to get a commitment to them to changing it. And, you know, the way our democracy works, the best way to do that is around election time, because that's when people will come and knock on your door and say to you, what do you think about this? Or what's important to you? So we have to use that lever because it's the most impactful lever. But it doesn't mean that I think there's one particular party or one particular candidate that could deliver this. This is this manifesto. It's some very broad aims. Everybody could deliver this. And that's genuinely what I want, for a unified approach from Enfield and all its representatives of all parties and none to work with all of its representatives to give us the borough and the open spaces and the green spaces that we deserve and that will help people's mental and physical health.
So your manifesto that you've sort of set up between all of the parks is really aimed at candidates standing at the local elections. Is that right?
Yeah, so it's aimed at anyone who's standing, so, you know, whether they're affiliated with a political party or not. And what we're asking the groups that are signed up to do is to contact anyone who's standing in their ward and say, are you aware of this manifesto? Will you commit to it? And if so, you know, can you do so publicly? And then we'll compile a list of people who have committed publicly, so that we can hold them to account if they're elected. But also it's a really good mechanism for those people who do want to sign up, whether they're elected or not, to reach out a hand to their local community group if they haven't already and say, tell me what you want, tell me what's going on here, why is this space important to you? So again, it's a way of using the mechanisms that exist in our democracy to build those bridges and connections with people and have better conversations, productive conversations, respectful conversations, so that we can, you know, learn from each other and build a better borough.
Yeah, I'll talk to you about how you keep people to account in a minute, or candidates and councillors to account. But in your manifesto itself, one of your demands is for the efficient maintenance and waste management, isn't it? What do you mean by that? And is there a problem there at the moment?
Yeah, I think I wouldn't necessarily say demands. I would say kind of requests, just I think it sounds nicer, but maybe demands is fine. I don't mind. But yeah, waste management, I think when you talk to a lot of friends, groups, or just generally residents, actually, I think one of the first things that comes up is litter. And I'll use the park that I'm involved with as an example, because it's the one I know best. But from speaking to others, it's replicated in other areas. But we only had, I think, you know, I can't remember exactly, but a really small number of bins until recently. And they were open bins, so the wind blew up the rubbish and blew it across the park. And then you had waste kind of all across the park with, you know, kids playing. It's not hygienic, it's not pleasant. So we've started up, we've been doing a monthly litter pick for about 10 or 11 months now. And every month we can get, even if it's four or five of us going out for just an hour, we can get, you know, six or seven sacks of rubbish. And some of that is about education. Obviously, it's not just about more bins, but education is a part of what the council should be looking at doing as well. So there is something about infrastructure. So is there an appropriate amount of bins in the park for the number of users, you know, who are using it? And that there is another bit about, well, what are we going to do around educating people about the impact of littering? And I think sometimes, and I think maybe this is a national thing and not just a local thing, that the extent of education is putting up a poster and saying, don't litter here. And that's not how behaviour change works either. So it's about working with, again, local groups, schools, other community groups on a real kind of programme of behaviour change to change how people look at these green spaces and want to maintain them.
Yeah, I mean that's criticism I heard from many people in parks as well. But one of the other things you say is that you want to encourage support for native plants and wildlife as well, and that's part of your manifesto request, to use your word. does that mean that you're asking for financial support, or are you asking for anything else?
You know, part of the respectful conversations is acknowledging to the council that there have been cuts to local authority funding in recent years, and I'm not ignorant to that fact, but there are cleverer ways to use money and more strategic ways to use money. And the majority of the time, those strategic ways to use smaller pots of money will be around engaging with volunteers and community groups, because they can stretch your pound for you. So I think in the manifesto, when we talk about native plants and wildlife, we do say the friends groups could maintain them. So we could come to an agreement where you're providing the seeds or the saplings or the plants, but the friends groups provide ongoing maintenance. And that is beneficial on so many areas. It's cost effective. It improves kind of, it improves the environment for animals and for humans, for air, the air that we're breathing, especially us, we're very close to North Circular here. But also it's so good for mental and physical health. If we could have more projects where we could be inviting people out to, to garden with us. When we did some tree planting, we got a grant from the Woodland Trust to plant some saplings. And we had some people come out, and people who hadn't planted trees before who were really interested, and people who didn't have gardens. And that was just a lovely thing to be able to do. So I think I'm a bit off on topic there, but yeah, essentially, so it is a request. I get very passionate.
Yeah, you're allowed to do that. But, it's a simple request to say to the council, can you provide the seeds, et cetera, et cetera. Have you not asked them to do that? And if you have, what's been the response?
I think some of this, again, is linked back to what I would say is more poor communication structures within the council. So I think often the people that we talk to, the people who work in the council, so obviously not elected officials, will say, that sounds like a really good idea, but they're not sure who is responsible for that part of the park. And then there might be some considerations around what can be planted where, which is completely reasonable, but no one will know who can sign off on it and which department they're in. And then you end up kind of spending 6 or 7 months trying to find the right person to make sure you can legitimately plant a few trees and flowers. And again, it's just not an effective use of volunteer time. So hearing what I assume most of the response will be around, you know, we have to be really limited where our resources are. I'm not saying don't do that, but I'm saying there are lots of ways to do both of these things. And it's definitely not an either or situation. And we shouldn't be allowing ourselves to get into an either or debate around some of this stuff.
And I mean, the third thing that you say in your manifesto is you want to increase community space. And by that, you mean shared spaces. Why do you think, or what do you think can be done to achieve that?
I think this is the one that probably does come with the biggest price tag on it. But again, I think the council's got to look strategically about how it works with community groups and how it works with independent philanthropic organisations or private donors to really kind of invest in parks. And again, not just looking at the price tag, which is one thing, but the other thing about looking at how we improve communication with the council, so, or how the council improves communication with us. So again, using my park as the park that I'm part of supporting as an example, there are some disused buildings in there, one of which I know a local business owner has said that they would like to renovate and put a proposal in, but about how they would do that. And the council said, well, no, it's not going to generate enough money and would have to put it out to tender to a wider range of people, which hasn't happened, and means that essentially that building is still sitting empty and it's not benefiting the community. But also it's bringing in no money. So I really don't get that argument. It's not going to bring in enough, so we're not going to do anything and it won't bring in any. Seems like a very illogical kind of argument. So I think some of it is less about giving us money when it comes to buildings and more about stepping aside and not being a blocker. So it's more about enabling community groups to do what they can't do, to say, you know, we'll work with you. This is a shared aim that we have. How can we support you in identifying funders? How can we support you in building strong bids? How can we support you in making sure that this is a viable concern? How can we link you up with other groups who are talking to us about this? So it's not all about money. We're just asking the council to work with us and to share our vision and to think about when sometimes unintentionally they're getting in the way instead of, you know, instead of facilitating change.
Okay, so those are some of the issues that you're concerned on. And you'll be asking councillors of all parties to commit to listening and to act on those needs. So, I mean, how will you be doing this? Will you be asking each and every candidate to sign up to the manifesto itself?
I would love to, but I'm going to try and be reasonable with what might be able to be done. I think we'll start with asking the friends groups that are signed up to write to the people who are standing in their ward, because you're much more likely to get a response to the person who's standing in your ward because you're a constituent of theirs and, you know, they need to be engaging with you. We've got about 10 groups signed up at the moment, I think, so that will cover, you know, 10 wards. The areas where we might not have a specific group representing the collective in that area, we'll look to see whether we can kind of double up and everybody does two maybe, or everybody does 2.5. We'll see what we can do to try and make sure we reach as many people as possible.
Okay, so you contact them, you hope you get an answer from them, you hope you get an answer from them. What will you do then? I mean, how will you sort of publicise it so that people know what councillors are saying and whether they do what you want or not, or whether they reply or not?
I think hopefully we'll be able to publish some of this information on NCAP's website, you know, who has signed up and who hasn't. And we'll keep a list ourselves. I think what might happen after the election, although I haven't given it as much thought as I probably should have at the moment, maybe I shouldn't admit that, is to contact the people who've signed up annually and say to them, what have you done, against this commitment in the last 12 months? What have you done to meet the commitment that you made to us? And then publish that information as well. So it's all about transparency and accountability, really. I think there's something around making sure that those people who sign up feel like they're not being held to a higher standard than those who haven't even bothered signing up. So sometimes I think people are like, oh, I could sign up to a manifesto like this, and then you're going to ask me how I'm committing on it, whereas you'll just leave the people alone who haven't even said that they'll try. So I don't want that to happen. I want to celebrate the people who are trying. So it's not about saying that in 5 years we think all of these commitments around waste management and community spaces and planting buildings and greater accessibility, which is the other one of the parks, will be met. But I think what we want to see is that we've got representatives who are raising these issues in council meetings and who are supporting their friends groups And we can write about when they're doing that, and we can say this is what's happening, and this is the support that's being provided. And unfortunately, it's not coming from these areas, but it is coming from this, because that's accountability.
Yeah, but in I mean, before you have the accountability and you want to sort of advertise or let people know what those candidates are saying, are you planning to put to sort of draft a list that we put up on the site somewhere, like MCAF, to say what people have said and what and the people who haven't said anything at all, so that people have an idea? And are you going to do any leafleting as well to actually let people know, or are you going to depend mainly on social media?
I think so. To the first part, we'll definitely kind of keep a record of who has replied and agreed and what they've said explicitly, and who has been written to and hasn't replied at all, or if they've replied but declined, or if they haven't been written to. So it kind of need to be fair what who's been written to and what they've said, and you know, publishing that hopefully on NCAP's website. I'd like to talk, we've been talking a little bit with Enfield Voluntary Action and with NCAF about maybe doing a hustings ahead of the election, but that's really early days. That's a lot of kind of work, so we don't want to commit to something that we're not sure will happen yet. And then in terms of leafleting, I don't know, to be honest with you. A part of me wants to say yes, because I know I'd love to, but then I'm also knowing, I'm learning from my 18 months in just doing this, is that sometimes I can overcommit and not be able to deliver. So we might try. If there's anybody out there who's watching this, who thinks I'm a good leafleter, or I'm good at designing, you know, I can help out with that, then get in touch with us, because the more hands, the more likely we are to be able to get this spread far and wide.
Okay, well, I mean, I hope you do get it spread far and wide, because it's important. But I like your ideas about following up once a candidate becomes a councillor, they're elected, and accountability. And I think you made a good point that we can all learn from, including us, that people who answer, we tend to descend on them. And those people who don't answer, we tend to forget them. And you've obviously given us a lot of thought to that, haven't you? We can't sort of victimise the people who've been good to cooperate with us. We've got to deal with all the councillors, especially those who don't answer at all.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's something I've kind of learned through other advocacy work, is that often, because it's so often so rare, unfortunately, to get someone to engage with you, that when they do, you can kind of focus a lot of energy on them. And then when they don't deliver, it can be really disheartening. Or when they do deliver, you kind of focus on what on the limits of that. And that is important. But then I think it can make other people think, oh, I don't want to step into that arena because it's a bit heated, and I think all I'm going to get is flack, so I might just step away. So I say, when we talk about building networks between the friends groups, I think that's really important, but we also need to build networks and connections with all the elected officials and the council. And there'll be different relationships, because it is a different relationship between people that you're trying to hold to account, or people that you're trying to influence, versus people who are kind of working with you in a collective sense. But it is important to think about how we nurture all these relationships, and how we can be critical but not close people down, or still feel like they've got room to grow with us and room to learn together. And that, I think that's how we change minds, really.
Okay, well, I mean, you've obviously thought this through. I mean, you say in some ways you haven't. And of course, whenever we do a project, we don't always think it through completely, but you have pulled it through quite considerably, and you've got the infrastructure of the collaborative network together. And, you know, we sort of come to the end of the 30 minutes now. And if anybody's interested in helping you out, if anyone's interested in, you know, finding out more about what you're doing or joining you in your efforts, I mean, where would they go? Who would they contact? What would they do to find out?
So we've set up an email address for this project. So you can email loveenfieldsparks@gmail.com. So loveenfieldsparks is all one word @gmail.com. And I'll respond, or you can message on here. I'll keep an on the Facebook feed or the YouTube, and I'll keep an eye out for responses. The Tottenham Hall Rec email address, if there's anybody in our area who's hearing this is tottenhallrec@gmail.com if you want to get involved with our local group as well.
Okay, well, we'll certainly publicise it, because I mean, I love the idea of collaborative networks. It's the way to go. And I think what you're doing is really good, because it is important to keep those in power to account, because very often people don't think of how to do that in the right way. And you thought that through, thought about contacting them beforehand, following up afterwards. And that's important. So you do have a strategic sort of approach to what you're doing. And I think it's important. And I'd love to talk to you as well, maybe about Hustings, because we could probably do one of those together. I think that wouldn't be difficult to do if we thought about how we're going to do it. But I think, you know, what you're doing is really great. And all of the friends of the parks, I think they it says a lot about their positive attitude that they've agreed to come together and do the work they're doing. So, you know, Christiana, thank you for joining us today. I mean, it's been really, really great. And you've given us a lot of information, which I think is important, and lots of people will find valuable. So thank you for joining us. And
thank you.
And we'll end this webinar now.
Thank you.